Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. What a week in the NBA. Troubling week and exhausting week. A week where it was often about everything but the actual basketball. And I don't want to belabor the Kyrie Irving saga. If you do want to hear all the latest there, Chris Mannix and I broke it all down, discussed it at length in a bonus edition of the Crossover that posted earlier today. You can find that in your feed. I did want to discuss some actual basketball today and some of the more positive stories of the early season. And so for that, I was happy to bring back TNT's Stan Van Gundy. And we get into some of the pleasant surprises so far. I'm talking about the Cavs, the Blazers, the Jazz, the Spurs, just some of the fun surprises of the early season. We did discuss some unpleasantness too regarding the Nets and Kyrie, but more from the basketball standpoint. Where do they go from here? Is this season salvageable, or is it time, as I believe, to blow it all up? Really interesting discussion with Stan on all of that and more. Before we get to that, my weekly plug, there's a great new book from Sports Illustrated and Triumph Books about the Lakers. It's called Greatest Show on Earth, featuring 15 stories from the pages of SI from the 60s through to the present, covering all the Laker legends, Kareem, Magic, Wilt Chamberlain, Elgin, Kobe, Shaq, written by some of the greatest sports writers of the era, Frank DeFord, Jack McCallum, Lee Jenkins, Chris Ballard. I had the honor of writing the introduction for the book, and it's available now for pre-order with a 30% discount. Here's what you do. Go to triumphbooks.com, search for Greatest Show on Earth. There is also a direct link in the summary of this podcast. You can also type that in bit.ly. It's a bit.ly link, bit.ly/Lakers75. When you get to checkout, use the discount code Lakers30. Again, triumphbooks.com, discount code Lakers30. Okay, my conversation with Stan Van Gundy is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to welcome back to The Crossover, Stan Van Gundy. Stan, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Been a strange week in the NBA, a strange start to the season overall, and kind of a stressful week, kind of an unpleasant week overall between the Kyrie Irving saga, the Josh Primo situation in San Antonio, Miles Bridges. I don't think I've seen a week quite like this in the NBA. And certainly on the Kyrie front, this is all new and troubling territory. So we will get to as many basketball-related basketball things as we can on this conversation today. But real quick overview. I mean, it has been a really strange week. Anything that has stuck out to you, struck you, just thoughts that are still kind of percolating in your head about what we've seen on all fronts?
Well, I think the big thing is we're only 8 or 9 games in, and, you know, led sort of by the Kyrie thing, we've just seen so much drama going on. I mean, we've got all these stories. I mean, you know, it sort of started off with, you know, Ime Udoka and, you know, coaching change there. Now we've had our first in-season coaching change already. Kyrie, Josh Primo. I mean, it's everything. Like, it's hard to get people, get fans to just focus on the basketball right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's some great basketball being played, which we will get to. But yeah, I mean, listen, we are used to, and you know, we use the broad heading of drama, and some of these are more serious things than others. Sometimes it's just a team infighting. Sometimes it's coach firings, whatever. In terms of NBA stories that are not about the basketball, this flood of them early in this season is something that in my 25-plus seasons, I don't think I've seen. They're all troubling in their own way. So let's talk about Kyrie real quick. We've all talked a lot, and Chris Mannix and I, folks, if you haven't listened already, Mannix and I have a kind of an emergency pod that we put up earlier today about all the latest goings on there, the suspension and where things go from here, Kyrie's apology, everything. So Stan, what I wanted to ask you broadly about is this. And I'm going to use the word distractions, and I do not mean to diminish anything about the Kyrie situation, because this is not the average NBA distraction. But we talk about things that take away from the team's focus, things that take away from the mission on the court. And this is a pretty large one, and with ramifications that go so, so far beyond basketball. But I want to put it, not to trivialize it, but I do want to put this in basketball terms. You've been a coach in this league and an executive in this league, and you've been around this league a very long time. When something like this arises, controversies both big and small, both weighty and not so weighty, what does this do to a locker room, to team spirit? When we in the media talk about, oh, it's a distraction, how much does this actually permeate the day-to-day? What do you imagine the Nets are going through right now as they try to also overcome a terrible start to the season while this is all now hanging over them?
Well, I look at the Nets, and the first word that comes to my mind is chaos. Yeah. I mean, and it's not just right now. I mean, it's like this organization, since the day they signed Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, a day that Brooklyn fans celebrated and was going to lead them to championships, it's been chaos ever since. And so, you know, we had the James Harden wanted to get there. They trade for him. Oh, now we're definitely a championship team. You know, Harden wants out. He goes. Kyrie won't get vaccinated. And so he can't. First they said they weren't going to have him play at all. Then they let him play on the road, you know, and then we go through in the summer, Kyrie doesn't want to come back, you know, and then he found out no one else wanted him, so he wanted to come back. And then Kevin Durant supposedly wanted to go, but he came back, but he wanted Sean Marks and Steve Nash fired. And then when Ben Simmons first came to the Nets, he didn't want to play. And then he plays the beginning of the year, and now he's hurt again. And then the Kyrie saga from, you know, look, over the last few years, you know, the earth is flat, anti-vax, support Alex Jones, and now support a movie that I guess has a lot of anti-Semitic stuff. Now, I'll admit I haven't watched the movie, but it's just, and then we're going to fire Steve Nash,
yeah,
you know, right into the season. And by the way, supposedly hire Ime Udoka, who was suspended for a year in Boston. Like, it's almost like they want drama there. Like, they don't want to focus on basketball. They haven't been able to focus on basketball for a couple of years here, and there's nothing indicating that they're going to be able to focus on basketball now. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know that I've seen a franchise have 2 years of turmoil like this franchise has, especially with the talent that they have on hand. It's really amazing and makes it very, very difficult to think that this team can get it together on the court.
I thought, Stan, that the most dysfunctional season I had ever witnessed up close as a beat writer back during my beat writer days was the Knicks in 2005-06. That was the Larry Brown year. And you had Larry Brown warring with Stephon Marbury, Larry Brown warring with Isaiah Thomas, who was team president, and then Isaiah Thomas and Marbury also at odds. So you had between the franchise star, the head coach, and the president of basketball operations, any two of the three of them or all three of them were all fighting with each other. And I thought I could never possibly see anything as dysfunctional, as chaotic, as toxic as that. And what the Nets have done over the last couple of years, is at least on par with. It's different. It's so fundamentally different because Kyrie's chaos, as you described it, is a whole different brand of chaos, right? It's not even about basketball. It's about everything but the basketball. At least Marbury, Larry Brown, and Isaiah were fighting about, you know, mostly basketball things. So this is, even as you listed down the things that have happened over the last year or so or 2 years, it's exhausting just thinking about, oh my gosh, oh yeah, and they did this, and then there was this, and there was this. Do you think that's part of the, they are 2-6 as you and I speak. Is that part of this rough start? Is that more about personnel? And do you think that, we don't know when the suspension for Kyrie will end, but is this thing still salvageable? Is there enough talent and enough, I don't know, can they just get through all this stuff? Or are these the kind of things that just kind of wreck a team because it's beyond basketball? This is weighing on the entire franchise.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's so much the Kyrie thing. I think one of the things that I would guess has been weighing on them, and maybe the coaching change will take care of some of that, is like Kevin Durant basically, you know, pulled the chair out from under Steve Nash in the summer. And so they go into the season, and I'm not even talking the fans or the media or anybody else. I'm talking in their own locker room. You know, they've got a built-in excuse. And so they were just waiting for the first bad stretch, saying, okay, Steve's going to be gone at some point. I mean, you know, that I'm sure was certainly on people's minds. It's just been hard there to focus on basketball. Now, is it salvageable? They certainly will get better, I think. You know, you've got guys like, I mean, assuming Kyrie Irving does what he needs to do in their minds to come back from this suspension, and assuming he doesn't sabotage things again with some other, you know, issue coming out of nowhere, because he certainly, you know, has a propensity to do that. Yeah. But assuming those things, they'll get better. But it's not a great roster. I mean, you know, it's just not a great roster. They never went out and got a, you know, real high-quality big man. And I like Claxton, but they've really got nothing behind him up front. Ben Simmons does not look like Ben Simmons when he plays. He was one of my favorite guys before the whole saga in Philly. You know, I thought he was the best defensive player of the year, high energy, always on the push in the attack. I know it's going to take time, but he just doesn't look like himself at all. I don't know. I mean, I certainly can't see them in the same realm with Boston, Milwaukee, Philly, if Philly's fully healthy. Probably not Cleveland, and you know, I mean, they'll get better. Where do they fit? Like, they're not a contender.
No, they look right now like a team that on paper had the potential to be a contender, but the way they're playing and the frailties that we've already seen, it feels like they're a second to third tier team at this stage, right? I mean, it's and they're like. functionally, they're probably not going to fix some of the roster issues during the season. They'll get Seth Curry and Joe Harris healthy, presumably, and maybe that extra shooting out there will, you know, prop up the offense a little bit, give them a little bit more firepower, more spacing, but it's not going to fix their defense. And that's one of my questions here too, Stan, is that, okay, let's assume it's Ime Udoka. And granted, there are a whole other host of issues that come with hiring somebody who's been suspended a full season by another team. Again, another thing that unprecedented in the time that I've been covering this league and probably your time as well. Ime Udoka as a coach, we know what the results he was able to get with Boston, galvanize a team that really needed a different voice perhaps, or just kind of his approach. And it worked very well in Boston. I don't know that the Nets are salvageable by coaching alone. And I don't know how you felt about the job that Steve Nash did, but again, trying to find an optimistic view here, or just wondering whether there's a pivot that they can make. Does going from a Steve Nash style coach, and obviously he had been a rookie coach, to Ime Udoka with the track record he has and the results we've seen, what impact does that have on them?
I don't know. I don't think coaching was their problem. I mean, what people forget about Steve Nash is 2 years ago, he was an inch from literally an inch from advancing. I mean, we're all celebrating Milwaukee, the NBA championship. They were one inch from knocking Milwaukee out of the whole thing. And now everyone's perception of Steve Nash would change with that. Yeah. I don't know if anyone has ever had less of an opportunity over a couple of years than Steve Nash. I mean, with the injuries, with Kyrie City, I mean, as we've talked about it enough, dysfunctional, like, I don't know who gets through all that. We make a big midseason trade and here comes Ben Simmons and nope, I'm not ready to play. I mean, it's been absolutely insane. I think that Ime Udoka had a really strong vision for his team in Boston. He got guys to buy into it. But that was also, you know, Boston Celtics have a strong foundation as an organization. They have a great deal of stability, 180 degrees from what he's coming into in Brooklyn, which is chaos. And so can he get some focus back on basketball? Can Kyrie just do basketball and nothing else to distract everybody? You know, I mean, maybe, but they haven't shown as an organization that's got any reasonable chance of happening.
Well, and on day one, Stan, not for nothing, but on day one, assuming that they do end up hiring Ime Udoka as expected, day one is going to be a press conference in which Ime is going to have to speak publicly for the first time since all that stuff happened in Boston, none of which he has discussed publicly. And there's going to be a lot of questions, fair questions, necessary questions. And, you know, this is nothing against Ime at all. I've known him literally since his first days in the NBA because I was covering the Lakers when he had a cup of coffee with them in training camp back in the early 2000s. But he's the wrong guy at the wrong time. For a team that has been dealing with nothing but chaos and controversy and needs stability, the last thing you should do is hire a coach who's coming in with this cloud hanging over him. And, you know, that's not to say that Ime shouldn't be able to work in the NBA again or anything like that, but it's just not now. Like, this is, they're asking for more controversy and they're getting it. Like, ever since that leaked a few days ago, I've seen any number of people commenting on writing about just the fact that this seems to indicate a franchise that doesn't have any value system, that has completely abandoned any pretense of having a healthy culture, because they're willing to overlook just about anything at the, you know, for the cause of winning, which they're not doing anyway.
No, so. Well, I mean, I think that's true. But if they can get through the press conference from Ime Udoka and Sean Marks having to explain their process and their vetting of him, and once the players in Brooklyn answer all the questions about Ime. If they can settle down, I mean, Ime, I think, proved that what he did in Boston is he can set a system, a value system of how they want to play on the floor. And at least there, he could get everybody to buy into it. Now, can he get Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant to buy into that? And if he can, there's still plenty of time left. And so Ime's a heck of a coach. And before this whole incident, you know this, Howard, he had a tremendous reputation as a person. So I think we're dealing with a good person, you know, foundationally, and a very good coach. And if they can get through the first part of this and establish something on the floor, fans will get back into the basketball part of it, and so will the team. I just don't know, even when they do that, if their roster's good enough. I mean, is there talent there? Of course. But we're going to compare it to Milwaukee? Yeah. Like, it's not close. We're going to compare it to Boston and Philly. I don't see it myself with them as a contender. Can I see them as a playoff team? Absolutely. But if we're talking this team can really make a run in the East, I have a hard time seeing that, at least in its present form. Who knows what they can do trade-wise or whatever.
Yeah. I've got a story that's should be up by the time people listen to this or soon, but I'm advocating that they tear it all down now. Like, this thing is already over. You know, they're not going to re-sign Kyrie next summer. I don't think they were going to even before the most recent stuff, and they definitely aren't now. So if Kyrie's gone anyway, you might as well see if you can get anything for him now. If this season is toast anyway, and you and I agree on that, at best they're a playoff team that won't last very long, then what are you still chasing, Brooklyn? At this point, just, you know, trade Durant for whatever you can get for him. Trade Kyrie if anybody will take him. Test the market for Ben Simmons. And you know, I like, he's probably untradeable, Ben Simmons. You could get something, but you won't get value. They might as well keep him and hope to revive him, revive his career. But like, I feel like this season is already done for them. On Simmons, and you can feel free to comment on any of that too, but on Simmons in specific, I've been curious just – when you watch him, we saw what he could do, and he was an incredible player a couple of years ago. All NBA talent, Defensive Player of the Year candidate, all of that. Do you think it's health, the back injury and the surgery? Is it the mindset? Because we know that he said, you know, he had, you know, kind of a mental block that last year that he didn't play in Philly. Is it adjusting to this team and two ball dominant stars that he's playing with? Is it rust? Is it all of it? Can you see by watching him anything that indicates which of these things maybe are the issue?
I think it's all of it. You know, it's all combined. I think any one of those things is probably something you can deal with individually, but he's just got a lot going on. And it's hard, I think, when you have all that going on to go out and play with great enthusiasm and confidence every night. And that's the thing I see as a guy. It's not that he's not playing hard. I don't think he's bringing any confidence to the game at all. You know, I mean, it's not just, I mean, the shooting's always been an issue. I think it's been too big an issue, to be quite honest. But now he's not even really attacking the basket, looking to score. He's been okay at best defensively. Certainly not the dominant guy defensively that we saw in Philly. So, yeah, he just doesn't look like a high-level NBA player.
Yeah. I floated this past a few people across the league over the last couple of days. The idea, and this goes to my blow-it-up recommendation, that if you trade Durant and Kyrie, keep Ben Simmons, you've got Seth Curry and Joe Harris, if they get healthy, so they're shooting. The idea of Ben Simmons plus shooting, you know, we never saw a Ben Simmons-centric team in Philly because it was a Joel Embiid-centric team, and we always wondered, well, what would it be if they'd built around Ben Simmons instead? So to the extent that Ben Simmons, in the belief that that player still exists, that he hasn't just lost it amid everything that's happened to him physically and otherwise, keeping Ben Simmons with whatever you can surround him with that you get back in those other trades, plus the guys they already have, Like, that actually is a semblance of what could be kind of a fun competitive team. Maybe not a great team, but certainly not a team that's, you know, going to tumble to the bottom of the standings, I don't think. I mean, they're already at the bottom of the standings.
I think that's a team that will be at the very bottom and in strong contention for Victor Wembanyama.
I mean, who will be then go to Houston since they have their draft pick?
I mean, it just that team would be. You take Durant and Irving off that team. I don't know if there's any team that's close to as bad as they are.
This is predicated on the idea that Ben Simmons is still Ben Simmons or can be this season, and that clearing the decks and making him the centerpiece will kind of reinvigorate that part of him. And now if it's a physical issue, Stan, or if it's a still shaking off the rust issue, if it's something that he can't get through right now, and it's going to take a year to get back to being Ben Simmons, then yeah, I'm being foolish. But I'm kind of, my working premise of this just thought process is just the idea that Ben Simmons that we know of, that we've seen before, that was an all NBA player, can get back to that sooner than later. If he's the centerpiece and if you surround him with, you know, decent role players, is that just too big of an ask?
I just don't think your centerpiece in today's NBA can be a guy who's not a scorer. I think the guy can be a big part of what you do, whether it's Ben Simmons or Rudy Gobert or whatever, but the centerpiece today's NBA has got to be a guy you're going to in the last 6 minutes of a close game, particularly the last 6 minutes of a playoff game. That's not Ben Simmons. That'll probably never be Ben Simmons.
Yeah,
agreed. I don't think you can center your team around him.
Yeah. No, it's probably too much to ask, but it's also everything ultimately is dependent on, well, what can you get for Kevin Durant, right? Like, are they high-level role players, or is there an all-star coming back? And there probably is not an all-star coming back, but who knows? Maybe it's the wait until January 15th, and maybe it's the DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges scenario, but then again, those two guys with Ben Simmons and shooting is not going to get you very far either, right? So, and that might be the best they can hope for, right, is a couple of really, really good starters, but probably not a star at this stage because of the lack of leverage they have and Durant having a lot of miles on him and not being able to play a full season. He hasn't played a full season since the Achilles.
Yeah, I just don't see him doing it in any sense. I mean, once they decide, look, Kenny Atkinson had that organization on an exciting path, right? I mean, developing talent, good young guys, a team that you really like to watch and everything else. And, you know, they blew that up to get to where they are now. I just don't see him reversing course and deciding to start all. I mean, it may be a path. I don't know. I'll admit a bias. I'm not real big on the let's tank and start all over. So I'm biased against that. So I'll admit that freely. But man, that would be a big turnaround from where we had a growing, developing team. We decided we want to win now. Oh, now we're going to go back and try to develop all over again, not having the young talent that we had when this whole thing started. So, this organization's a mess, an absolute mess. No, it is. It's a mess.
No, it's true.
It's a mess. I mean, and I'm not pointing fingers at anyone. It's just a mess. It's a mess on and off the court. It's got to be very, very difficult for Brooklyn Nets fans to, you know, it's almost embarrassing to support this team.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just a really tough situation.
Yeah, no, it's all kind of a disgrace right now. As I say, my premise is based on just the idea this is over anyway, right? Because I think what'll happen is they don't resign. Let's play it out for the season. They keep everybody together. They're not going very far. We agree on that. They get to the offseason. Kyrie walks away, and Durant's probably back to asking for a trade anyway. So sometime soon, whether it's in the next 2 months, which I think they should do, or whether it's next summer, this thing is over. Like it's you know, there's no salvaging this. So at some point, they're going to have to rip the Band-Aid off. And yeah, like they are in that perilous position of if they bottom out and they have the unlucky ping pong ball bounce, and that pick becomes Victor Wembanyama. Victor Wembanyama is going to the Rockets, and that will be on Sean Marks's resume and everybody else's with the Nets forever and ever. But it's a sunk cost. Like, there's no saving face at this point, or any saving face you're doing is a partial face save. Like, I don't think there's anything to save at this point. But anyway, any last thoughts on the Nets before we move on to some more pleasant items?
No, but I do think, you know, here they were in 2019, sort of shocked the NBA world.
Yeah, and it was a huge victory to get those guys.
To sign both of those guys in 2019. Then a year after that, in the season, they add James Harden. Now, you tell me if we had said all of that is going on, and in 3 years you would have won one playoff series, nobody would have believed you. I mean, we were looking at, you know, a team that we thought was going to be a championship contender for the foreseeable future. Yeah. And now they are where they are now. I mean, it just shows you, you know, it's a cliche to say championships aren't won on paper, but they're not. I mean, and you've got to wait and see how everything works out. In retrospect, nobody would say this. In retrospect, going back to 2019, if they knew what they knew now and could get a do-over, they're not signing both of those guys.
Have to agree. And nobody could foresee, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic and, you know, bubbles and vaccines and vaccine mandates and the foot on the arc, as you referred to, alluded to with Durant in that Bucks series. I mean, it's a thousand little things, but regardless, the result's the result. It's a freaking disaster. I mentioned earlier Kyrie and everything else, an unpleasant week. So I wanted to try to spin this forward to something a little more positive with pleasant surprises. I'm moving from the unpleasant to the pleasant. So pleasant surprises early in this season. We have the Trailblazers, who people just kind of left for dead. And then the Jazz and the Spurs, all of these teams out west, of course, who were supposedly going to be tanking for Wembanyama. But all three of these teams are off to really nice starts, Lillard's injury notwithstanding. Of those three, Stan, Portland, Utah, San Antonio, who do you have the most belief in? Because we're playing with small sample sizes here, it's early in the season. But who do you have the most belief in to actually be able to sustain this and be a relevant team in April?
Oh, Portland, easily. Because Portland's the only one, first of all, that's got a star. I mean, they've got Damian Lillard, who they can run at the offensive end. And then they went out and got, over the last, from the trading deadline last year to now, they got some really important veteran help in Jeremy Grant and Josh Hart. Not only good, solid players, but tough guys that elevate what has for a long time been a really bad defensive roster in Portland. I remember when Neil Olshey famously said when, you know, he fired Terry Stotts after very good success, you know, this isn't a roster that should have been 29th defensively. And I said, you know what? That's very true. That roster should have been dead last.
I think the Kings were the only ones keeping them from that. Yeah.
And I think they finally realized there, right? Joe Cronin saying, if we're going to get better defensively, well, we got to get guys who have a chance to guard. I mean, Bill Belichick, I love it. He said few years back, if you want a smart, tough football team, you better go out and get smart, tough football players because you're not going to change them. And I think the Trailblazers realized that and said, if we're going to defend better, this is radical, but let's go get a couple guys who can defend. And they have done that. I don't know that their depth, you know, can hold up, but I thought at the beginning of the year that was a team that had a very good chance to be a playoff team. So I'm not really all that surprised. Now, they're not going to play 700 basketball the whole year. I'm not saying that, but I think they're going to be pretty good. I think San Antonio will fall and fall here pretty quickly. They're already starting to show signs of, okay, we're really not that good. But Utah has shocked me. I mean, shocked me. Like, you know, they took a team. There were four teams last year in the NBA that were in the top 10 offensively and defensively. Utah was one of them. They had a coaching change and got rid of most of their players. And here they are playing really, really well. Now, they've also been able to win every close game. They've been great. You know, those things, as we know, are going to even out as the season goes on. I don't expect them to be a playoff team, but their start has shocked me. And not just by the numbers, but the eyeball test when you watch them, that team plays well. They are playing good basketball. And, you know, Lauri Markkanen is your main guy offensively, and you're playing really, really good basketball. So that's been a fun story there.
Yeah, and it's a reminder of a couple of things. One is that while teams might try to structurally tank, set themselves up where they get rid of all their best talent, go with youth and all this, and so structurally they're set up to lose a lot because they want to get a high pick, there's things we cannot account for. One of which is that players have pride and want to win, and coaches have pride and want to win. And sometimes funny things happen just in terms of chemistry, right? Like, chemistry is this thing we talk about that's completely undefinable. You can't manufacture it. You can't predict it sometimes. But people have compared this Jazz team, and you'll remember this too, Stan. The Phoenix Suns were supposedly taking back in 2013-14, ended up winning 48 games and just missing the playoffs because the eighth seed that year was the Mavericks at 49 wins. Right. But that Suns team ruined what was supposed to be a tank job because they had this incredible chemistry, loved playing together, played their butts off. And all of us who talked about them being a tanking team were just made to look absolutely foolish.
Yeah, I mean, like, players never tank.
Yeah.
Coaches never tank. Organizations tank in terms of how they put their roster together. But, yeah, this team in Utah is playing really well. And I don't expect – the West is strong. I don't expect them to be able to hold on to that. But they're competing really, really well. And – it would be a great story if they could hang on.
Okay, so in a year, though, that does have Victor Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson atop the board, and given that the Jazz did just trade their two all-stars over the summer and are supposedly, we'll say, rebuilding instead of tanking, I know you do not endorse tanking. You said that at the top of the show. But as a practical matter, shouldn't the Jazz be looking to move, you know, Clarkson, Conley, you know, whomever, whatever it takes to, I mean, they're like, this is not their new young core, right? This is, you know, Conley's an older player. This is not a team that they are, you know, Markkanen obviously has been fantastic early on. This is not a team they're necessarily going to consider as their new core, I don't think. And small market teams only have so many avenues to get a star to build around. Part of why I don't think that they're going to sustain this is because it feels inevitable to me that they're going to try to sell off some of those pieces, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, I think Conley and Clarkson will be gone at some point. You know, I think that they have set very high prices on their players. Obviously, great return. If you want to rebuild, great return on Gobert, great return on Donovan Mitchell. They're not going to get those kind of returns for Clarkson and Conley, but I think they're not looking to sell guys off for less than what they think they're worth. And so I think they're going to hold out for quite a while, but eventually, yeah, I expect they'll be gone. And, you know, a bench scorer like Clarkson and a veteran point guard like Mike Conley are going to be valuable guys to teams that are missing those kind of pieces to make a run in the playoffs. So I think it'll be really interesting to see where they end up, but I'm with you. they're not going to end up on that team.
Yeah. Quick question about each of the other two teams we discussed. My question on the Spurs, obviously not sustainable, and obviously this is not a team that was trying to win this year after trading DeJounte Murray, and you know, they're trying to figure out what their next era is going to be about. As they do that, and what you've seen of the Spurs so far, any individuals that are standing out where you're thinking, you know what, things are going to be kind of bleak for the foreseeable future. Maybe they get Wembanyama in the lottery. Maybe they don't. Maybe they get Scoot. Maybe they don't. But this player, these two guys, anybody who's stuck out that you think, okay, these guys are going to be a key to whatever this next Spurs era is.
Well, I think they've got guys who are good players and will develop into good players. Obviously, Pop does a great job coaching them. You love the way they play. But they're going to need an opportunity to draft high, because there's not a star on that team going forward that they can build around. There's no Paolo Banchero. There's not that guy that can be the centerpiece of a team even down the road. I don't see anybody on that roster that I look at and say, that guy could develop into the guy you can count on for 20-plus every night. I don't see that. So to me, it's a roster of complementary players and role players. Now, I don't think they're probably done making moves. And the guy to me that should draw a lot of interest from like a Brooklyn or the Lakers, if they're going to go forward and try to win, is Jakob Poeltl. I mean, that guy is a good NBA center. And I think anybody who's looking for a big and wants to make a run, that guy could help you a lot. Now, it's a matter of what people would be willing to give up for him. But he's a marketable guy. Obviously, Keldon Johnson, I mean, good player. Yeah. But they're not giving him up. He's one of their real building blocks. But he's probably your best young guy. That's not going to get it. He can't be, I don't see 5-6 years down the road that you're going to field a really, a contending team with Keldon Johnson as your centerpiece. Their centerpiece is coming sometime in the next 2 or 3 years.
In the draft, yeah. No, Johnson's off to a phenomenal start, though. He's averaging almost 24 points a game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, been scorching from three. So
somebody's going to score on every team in the league. The hardest guys to me to evaluate in the league are the guys who score a lot of points on really bad teams. Yeah. I mean, really hard to evaluate them because – somebody's going to score. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Can they do that on a good team? Can they help a good team? He can help a good team. There's no question, but not as their centerpiece guy.
All right. My last kind of pseudo pleasant surprise. And I say pseudo pleasant surprise because everybody knew they'd be good, but so far they've been awesome. And that's despite missing one key player for a lot of this. The Cavs at 6-1, Darius Garland's played just 2 games as you and I record this, but they're 6-1. Donovan Mitchell has been playing just out of this world. I had the Cavs as you had a breakthrough season. You're looking good. Maybe you're a top 6 team in the East, but you're second to third tier. You're not up there with Milwaukee and Boston. Small sample size, but they're playing out of their minds. They've been fantastic. And Garland is still now just getting back in the mix. Should we reconsider? Are the Cavs now a legit contender, or are they still just a young team on the rise?
Yeah, that's going to have to play out, but I think they've got a chance to be a contender. I mean, when you look at their roster, it makes sense. They, a little bit like Boston, have embraced playing 2 big guys together that have mobility, that can get out on the floor and defend like a Mobley and also protect around the rim. And then they greatly beefed up their offense with the move to Donovan Mitchell in the summer. They've still got Caris LeVert. They've got some depth. I think they're for real. Now, to me, Milwaukee at full strength is, even though the East is good and deep, I just don't see anybody beating them if they're in the East, if they're at full strength. I mean, let's face it. You know, they go seven games with Boston last year, who goes to the finals without Chris Middleton. So, you know, and they've got more experience, but Cleveland's better than they were last year. They're a legit top five defensive team. They were fifth last year. They're in the top five again. And their offense has got more weapons now with Garland and Donovan Mitchell. So, yeah, I think they're a legit team. I mean, I think they're there with – I put Philly into the top three myself with Boston and Milwaukee, and then I think Cleveland is – can certainly challenge those teams and is as good as anybody else besides those three.
Yeah. No, I mean, I if they crash the top four now, get home court advantage, it will no longer surprise me. If they somehow got made into the conference finals because of matchups or whatever else, at this stage probably wouldn't surprise me. And it also is the Cavs will be a haunting reminder for the Brooklyn Nets, who we talked about a lot earlier, because Jared Allen has been fantastic for them. Caris LeVert is there. Those guys are there because of that James Harden deal that, you know, they got all of a year out of. And yeah, if not 50 other things and Harden's own injury with Brooklyn, who knows? Maybe it would have paid off. But I always felt like that was the one move too many. I liked the, you know, KD and Kyrie plus really good role players, which included Jared Allen and Caris LeVert and others. Like that was the moment where they almost went, like, I felt like the step too far, too overweighted towards stars and no depth. And those are guys that, you know, they certainly could use right now. They'd be a whole different team if Jared Allen is playing center right now.
Oh, if they've got Jared Allen and Caris LeVert right now, I mean, instead of Ben Simmons, yeah, they're a totally different team. There's no question about that. It's hard. I get it. It's hard to say no to James Harden. You know, it's hard to say no to James Harden. But, you know, they also had a little bit more balance before, you know, between offense and defense.
Yeah.
You know, Jared Allen could at least protect the rim. They had a little bit of balance there. Then they went totally into, we don't think defense matters at all, so we're going to try to outscore you, and that's sort of where they are now. I think that Ime Udoka's emphasis on the defensive end of the floor is probably what attracts them to him. But going back to the whole Portland thing, it's still roster. You know, it's still, you've got to have guys out there who will commit to that end of the floor and have the ability at that end of the floor.
Yeah, no, it's always funny when people say this and they talk about, we do this from various ends of it, but you talk about coaches who emphasize defense or a defensive minded coach. If you don't have the defenders to execute it, then you as coach are a little helpless with that, right? I mean, we've saw Tibbs was a defensive genius in Chicago, and suddenly he didn't know how to anything about defense anymore, apparently, in Minnesota, because they were bottom third every year. But it's personnel, people. Like, it's not, like, you can scheme all you want, and you guys are really smart, Stan. You and coaches are very smart, but you can scheme all you want. But if guys can't execute it or don't want to, there's only so much any coach can do. So I don't know what Ime is going to do with that Nets roster to get them to play defense, but seems kind of bleak.
It certainly does. And you're right. I mean, you know, I coached really good defensive teams in Orlando, and the reason is we had Dwight Howard. Yeah. And he's a defensive player of the year three times, you know. You know, why was Utah so good defensively the last few years? Well, they had Rudy Gobert back there, and Mike Conley, who's a really solid defender, and smart guys. I mean, there is an aspect of the entire team and understanding their role and guys making a commitment, and certainly the coach has something to do with that. But just like on offense, it being personnel, it's personnel oriented on the defensive end too, and particularly having people that can anchor your defense. I mean, to me, Boston was the number one defense in the league last year, primarily, first of all, they don't put a weak defender out there in their starting five. It's the best defensive personnel maybe in the league. And Robert Williams was the anchor back there. I mean, you've got to have an anchor defensively. And so I trust the teams that are good defensively, particularly in the regular season, because I think it takes care of a lot of your ups and downs and makes you more consistent. I mean, when you're strictly an offensive team, like, the ball's got to go in every night, and it doesn't do that for anybody.
Yeah. Let the record reflect, people, that Stan Van Gundy did not forget how to coach defense when he left Orlando for Detroit. He just lost Dwight Howard.
Well, that was
you'd already lost him.
Yeah, it was a big part of it. I mean, those guys certainly, you know, make a huge difference in terms of how you look as a coach.
Hey, the Nets, I know Dwight is not the Dwight that you had once upon a time. The Nets could use Dwight right now. He's a free agent. I don't know why they don't just sign him. It's you know, you're not going to put him out there for 40 minutes, 35 or even 30, maybe 15, but my gosh, it'd be something at least. But
well, yeah, I'm sort of surprised, you know, as you bring that topic up, I'm a little surprised with some of the guys that are out there still. Like, yeah. I look at a team like Brooklyn who needs big guys. Why not Dwight Howard or even Cody Zeller, you know, who's got mobility in the whole thing? And then the one that's really surprised me, to be quite honest, is Carmelo Anthony. Like, I'm looking at a Laker team that never makes a shot. He played really well for them, was one of their most reliable offensive guys a year ago. They don't want him. You know, they'd rather have a bunch more guys who can't shoot. I've been a little surprised that some of those guys have not found a home.
Yeah, and I know Carmelo doesn't really play much defense, and even in his prime didn't play a ton and certainly doesn't now. But, yeah, he absolutely can make shots and make open threes, and there's a place for those guys in the league, but there's plenty of shooting specialists in this league who don't play much defense. So I hope we see Carmelo back sometime soon. I hope we see Dwight sometime soon. And I definitely think there's teams that could use both of them. So Stan, this has been fantastic. Again, thank you so much for spending the time. I'll let you get back to what looks like a gorgeous day there in the greater Orlando area. And see you on the tube sometime soon when TNT comes back. Folks, to quick note, no Tuesday night games, so no Stan on Tuesday because that is election day. The NBA, for the first time ever, no games that day because they want us all to be thinking civic-minded, which I think is the right idea. So get out and vote. And Stan, thanks so much again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Howard.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Stan Van Gundy. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.